feels so good to start the 8 o'clock hour. Some hockey highlights, doesn't it? Welcome back to the show, everybody. Or are you just joining us? Welcome to it. Hope you had a nice long weekend. If you're off, you're getting back into it with a little bit of rain falling this morning. Certainly it was a wicked storm for some of you on Sunday. We got some rain off and on throughout the day today. But things get better as the week goes on. By Thursday, we're into sunshine, looks like, right through the weekend. Currently sitting at 17 degrees. JR, Sean Simpson, and Steve Bund is in for Hammer this week. And always happy to be joined by Pierre McGuire, live from the bubble in Edmonton, a presentation of the Myers Automotive Group. How are you doing this morning, Pierre?
I'm always good when I talk to you, JR. Good morning to you. Hello, Sean.
All right, Pierre, how many games did you end up doing yesterday when it was all said and done?
Yesterday I only did one. I watched all three that were here, and I watched two from the East Coast. So I watched a lot of hockey the day before. I did three, and the day before that I did two.
Nice. How is your work schedule gonna lay itself out in terms of the number of games you're gonna end up doing?
After tomorrow, I would say probably two per day. Obviously you got to wait to see how everything falls out, but I would say probably two per day.
All right. What do you got on the agenda for today?
Just won the late game, Minnesota-Vancouver. Okay. I'll be at the rink for all the games, but I have the one game right tonight.
Yeah, so take us behind the scenes. You're inside the bubble. A lot of us are curious. We're seeing it through our televisions, and things appear to be so well organized. What's it like to be in the middle of all of it?
Really well organized, number one. The professionalism of everybody, the healthcare workers that do all of the testing every day, the setup at the arena, the NHL staff, everything's been unbelievably well run. The hotel staff has been amazing. I can't say enough good things about everything that's gone on here. It's really well orchestrated. And, you know, the players have really been well behaved and really respecting the process that they have to go through in order to play. It's not easy, JR. You know, every player gets tested every day. Everybody that's in the bubble that goes into the arena gets tested every day. There have been zero COVID positive tests so far since they started this when all the teams got here and the media people that are working in the building got here. It's really been amazing to watch the whole thing work. It really has been.
Pierre, last year was Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. We'd get you in Dallas, St. Louis, San Jose, over to somewhere else. How nice has it been to hunker down? The hockey's come to you, and when you're not working, do you get into a bit of a scouting mode?
Yeah, that's, well, a scouting mode for sure. It's funny, I was up writing notes yesterday, breaking down players and systems and coaching ideology, and one of the cameramen came over to me and goes, "What are you doing? You're by yourself the whole time watching games." I said, "Yeah, I'm in scouting mode." He started laughing. But that's exactly what I was doing. I'm just sitting in the corner of the second level of the rink by myself watching games. It's something that I really enjoy doing. I know for most people they'd probably find it a boring exercise, but I'm fascinated by learning all the time about different coaching methods, about different in-zone coverage ideologies, about different power play entries, about different power play schemes, penalty killing schemes, what players have character, what players I think don't have any character. So I'm always watching for different things and learning as we go along. So it's been really fun, actually.
So after 3 days and 16 games so far, what's just been an overall encompassing thought on the level of hockey as we've seen so far?
Getting better almost by the minute. You can just see the timing issues are getting better. The fluid nature of the game is getting better. The intensity level has been ramped up right from the start, and that continues to evolve as well because obviously we're in playoff situations for most of these teams, and you can see they're starting to take some of this stuff personal, which usually leads to animosity, and that's what we're starting to see in some of these series, or most of them. And so I just think everything's evolving in a positive manner. I talked to two members of the Vancouver Canucks yesterday and two members of the St. Louis Blues yesterday who obviously had off days, and both of those two groups, one in a playoff series with Minnesota and the other one getting a bye, both talking about the intensity level and how it's becoming extremely intense around their organizations just because, you know, the situation that's gone on. St. Louis losing in the last second to Colorado and Vancouver losing 2-0 to Minnesota in the first game. So I would say you're just going to continually see that a very intense environment.
Do you find yourself going into fan mode when you watch McDavid play and just look at an athlete could be that much better than everybody else on the ice?
It's surreal, Sean. The second goal that he scored last night, the first one was great just because of the way he set it up and the hockey brain power that went into it. But the second one, it had nothing to do with brain power. It had to do with unbelievable athleticism. I don't know of any player that I've ever seen have that ability with that kind of speed, the quickness of his hands, and the, just the uncanny athleticism. It's just, it's something that you marvel at. And to be at ice level and to see the speed, it's one thing to watch it on TV. It's another thing to be there at ice level. And, you know, I'm just thinking, poor Olli Maatta, he's got no shot to stop this guy, zero. And he had not. I mean, you could see it right away. I'm like, oh, boy, if this puck bounces over McDavid's stick, that's a break for Maatta. But I don't think it will, and it didn't.
Yeah, it was an incredible goal. He ends up getting a hat trick on the night. The Oilers decided to go with Mikko Koskinen. Not a huge surprise, given the fact they pulled Mike Smith in Game 1. Just a thought on Dave Tippett deciding to start Smith in Game 1 when everybody said that Koskinen not only was better in the regular season, but better in the training camp. Why do you think he went with Smith in the first place?
I think, number one, he knows his body of work unbelievably well. He coached him in Dallas. He coached him in Arizona. So he's got a pre-existing relationship with the player, number one. Number two, he's an older player. He probably had a little bit more trust in him at that point. But I give Dave credit. Eddie Olczyk and I were doing the color of that game, and we both said it virtually at the same time. In the first period, you got to pull him. And they started Mike Smith in the second, and then they ended up pulling him. I would have pulled him right after the first period and just said to Koskinen, you're going in. Had nothing to do with Mike Smith. It had to do with getting the team's attention. But I think the biggest reason why Mike probably got the start in Game 1 was just there's a sense of familiarity where Dave could go back to his time in Dallas and back to his time in Arizona and say, I know Mike, I know what he can do, and I think he's ready for this. That's probably the one thing that decided it.
Jets Flames look like old school Smythe division. Carry over and the hate was on. Opportunity missed by Calgary, not seizing with Scheifele and Laine out.
Yeah, and they did it to themselves. I give Winnipeg and Paul Maurice full credit. I mean, they came with a plan. They played for one another. They didn't play for themselves. They played for one another, which is a huge part of that. When you're going to come from behind in a series, everybody's got to man up and really protect one another. And I think they did that yesterday, and they played smart. Whereas Calgary, footloose and fancy free. I mean, silly penalties. Andrew Mangiapane, Sam Bennett, just bad, bad penalties. Selfish penalties, I think. That's what I would call them. And to the players' credit, both of them stood up and said they can't be doing that. And so I give them credit for that. But, yeah, no, Calgary was a wasted opportunity for Calgary. That I give, again, Winnipeg's full credit, man. They battled hard. They really battled hard.
Carey Price has been outstanding through two games in the Pittsburgh-Montreal mm-hmm. series. The Penguins break through, though, and get the win last night 3-1. But from what you've seen of Carey Price, can he win this series for Montreal, potentially?
If he can score, he can.
he is a good puck handler, though, right?
He's elite. But the problem, though, JR, is you can see how hard Montreal has to work just to try to stifle the Pittsburgh attacks. And because of that, they're not getting as many offensive opportunities you need to beat it. And Matt Murray's a good goalie. To beat a goalie like Matt Murray, Carey's putting as much duress on the Pittsburgh Penguins as you can imagine. I can only imagine what the coaches are saying at Pittsburgh. But the truth is that now they're starting to get into his kitchen a little bit. They're dumping him a little bit more. They're creating more crease confrontation. They're putting more duress on the Canadiens' defense. I don't know how much more Petrie and Shea Weber can give them, along with Ben Chiarot. Those three guys are giving them a ton and a chance to win along with Carey. I just don't think they have enough offensive firepower to beat Pittsburgh.
Is it as simple, Pierre, at the end of the day? Tatar, Todomi, to Drouin are going to have to step up at some point and score some big goals if they have any chance?
Well they got to get Max Domi playing. They got to move him up in the lineup. You know, play him as a fourth-line center. I don't know how that helps the process. I'd say to him, Max, we know you want to play center, but we need you on the wing, and we're moving you up in the lineup. I said this before, right after the first pre-tournament game, the only pre-tournament game Montreal played, I said, I like the fact that, you know, Max Domi's playing at center, but you got to play him more. And, you know, they haven't done that yet, and I would be moving him up in the lineup. And they definitely need Tatar and Drouin to step up. You and I talked about it when JR was on holiday, talked about Drouin in the first pre-tournament game, and they need more from him. I mean, he's a big-time player for them, and if they don't get more from him offensively, they're not going to win.
The first team facing elimination will be the New York Rangers. Tonight they will host Carolina. The Canes won yesterday 4-1. We don't know whether Shesterkin will be good enough to play tonight, but they have a third option in Gorgiev. At this point, if you're the Rangers, do you try something and replace Lundqvist with Gorgiev at the very least?
I would. It's no disrespect meant to Hank. But, you know, again, that's a soft goal. The first goal can't go in. The short side goal by Svechnikov. That's, you know, it's a hard shot, but that's got to be stopped. It's short side. It's through his body. You can't let pucks like that go in, especially with a young team that's trying to find its way in the playoffs. So I would make a goaltending change. But no, again, I'm not going to disrespect Henrik Lundqvist. I've seen too much good work from him over the years. He deserves, you know, a lot of adulation and respect. But the Rangers, you can see, young team, building, getting better all the time. It's probably not right now. You can see Carolina from last year's playoff battles, especially with Washington, how much they learned. And you look at their defense. The addition of Brady Shea has really helped them. The addition of Joel Edmondson has really helped them. The addition of Sammy Vatanen has really helped them. So you add those three guys to a defense that went to the second round of the Eastern Conference playoffs last year. That's pretty good. That's really good.
Pittsburgh and obvious, but if you are the Washingtons, the Bostons, the Phillies, and the Tampas, are you getting a little nervous about facing Carolina in round one?
Yeah, I would. I don't think it's easy. Brindamore is a really good coach. Mrazek played very well in the playoffs the last 2 years. He's been very good so far this year again. So I would not want to be in a rush. They have one of the best defensemen in terms of mobility. They still haven't played Dougie Hamilton. So I think that when you look at it, they're a good team. And Sebastian Aho is legit. This guy's a big-time good player. He's really good.
And they could get, if they go as long as September, which sounds crazy to say, but Brett Pesce could be back as well if they play hockey in September, which is just really odd.
That's a great point, by the way, Jared. Very, very, he's an overlooked player. He's a very good player for them. Very good point. A
couple of the seeding games went yesterday. Tampa beat Washington in a shootout. Mm-hmm. Vegas over Dallas with a big comeback in the third period. Again, this is just me through my television. You're actually in the rink. Is there as much intensity in those round robin games as in the play in games, in your opinion, early on?
Not really. No, I don't see that. I see the playoff series have been far more intensity. The Vegas-Dallas game started out a little bit intense and it backed off, and then when Vegas needed a push, it got intense again. So I would say the one thing that, and Vegas has the one line with Ryan Reeves and Willie Carrier and Thomas Nosek that is not a lot of fun to play against, so they can get after people. So they started pushing back a little bit physically as the game went along, but I would say those play-in game, they're not as intense as the playoff series that we're seeing.
Any read into Leonard starting as to who might start round one of the playoffs for Vegas and goal?
No, I think that speaks to what JR was talking about. I think they're still doing a little bit of test driving with some of these lineups, and Robin deserved an opportunity to play in the IFP at DeBoer and his staff, and so he got that chance. Fleury seemed very comfortable and affable on the bench watching him, so I don't think there are any issues there.
Boston lost their exhibition game and then lost their first round-robin game versus Philly the other day. They are going to get, looks like, Tuukka Rask back for their game tomorrow. But is there a team that maybe was hurt most by the long layoff than Boston, which had such a great regular season, had a huge lead in the overall standings, 4.5-month pause, boom, you really get, other than, you know, kind of getting a play-in bye, you really don't get any advantage. Is there a team that's been maybe hurt more so far, at least, than Boston?
Yeah, no, they're a bit of an older roster too. There's no question. Everybody's kind of nitpicking on Tuukka Rask and the goaltending situation in Boston. I think let's see where it all plays out at the end. It's a little early to prejudge anything. You know, I don't know how healthy Brad Marchand is. Pasternak obviously having issues because of the coronavirus and everything else. That was an issue for them. It kind of messed with their chemistry. But I would say that's a fair point, because the Bruins were a team that was really in rhythm and playing at an unbelievably high level before we got to the pause, for sure. I would agree with that.
Because of that veteran pedigree, though, is that the one team that can turn it on? And in this case, you know, turn it on come first round versus some other clubs?
Yeah, that's why I don't want to prejudge them. I think it's more than fair that you have to respect the fact that they went to a Stanley Cup final last year, Game 7 that they lost. They have a winning pedigree. They've got guys who really know how to push the right buttons. I would say that I wouldn't, again, be in a panic mode if I were the Boston Bruins or their fan base.
4 o'clock this afternoon, game two, Columbus and Toronto. The Blue Jackets won game one, 2-0. If you're Toronto, do you change anything, or you just say, hey, listen, we played a good game. But for one bad goal, we could have taken that game. Or do you think that he'll start moving some lines around? There's been some talk of moving Marner on to align with Matthews. What do you do if you're Sheldon Keefe, do you think, this afternoon?
Well, number one, I'm trying to take care of Seth Jones because he's doing the number on Austin Matthews. So I'd put a little bit of sandpaper and grit and get after him a little bit rather than him getting after my guy. I want him to be worn out. I don't want my guy being worn out. So I need a little bit of a plow horse mentality. It's not really the way the Leafs are built, but it's becoming that kind of a series, and it's what I thought would happen because of the way John Tortorella coaches and the systems that he deploys. He makes it really tough for you to get to the net. So you need a little bit more of a smash mouth mentality. Again, I don't know if the Leafs are built that way, but that's something I would try to encourage in my lineup. I would do more of short side shoot-ins, create foot race situations with their defense. They're bigger people. They'll get tired. They'll get worn out. Don't make it easy for them to go back and get the puck so that the goalie's playing the puck and setting it up for the D. Make the goalies or the defenseman have to go to the corners to get pucks rather than behind the net. So that's one of the adjustments that I would make. And I think the biggest thing is I would really put a huge emphasis on faceoffs. The reason being Columbus probably likes to stall the play a little bit in their own zone in particular, so they're more faceoffs. Put a huge emphasis on winning faceoffs and having set faceoff plays in the offensive zone. If you could do those things, I think it might loosen things up a little bit for the Stars. But they've got to get a little bit more of a nasty edge to them. Talking about their star players in Toronto.
If you're Leafs, would you get creative? Maybe have Gauthier grow a Austin Matthews style mustache and run a bit of a decoy. Some confusion? No. Let's be serious now. To the heart of this point, though, do you go to the Nylanders and Marner? A couple of years ago, we applauded his sandpaper against Boston. Is it quite simply starting to now challenge some of these guys?
Well, that's what I mean. You got to internally bring them in. And one of the things that I learned over time is you don't do that in a team environment situation. You do that with individual meetings, and you bring the guy in and show him some tape of, okay, look, here's where I think you need to be harder. Here's where I think you can help us. Rather than make it a negative exercise, you make it a positive exercise, and you don't do it in front of teammates. You don't humiliate the guy in a playoff series in front of his teammates.
It's been a lot of penalties so far. It's anecdotal on my part. I don't have a stat in front of me that says there's more or less than any other playoff, but do you get the sense that referees right now are calling it close? Do you think they'll ease off, or do you think this is a mandate to really crack down throughout the entire playoff?
I think they're calling it really close, and I think there's a mandate to call it close all the way through. Now, human nature kicks in at some point, and usually by the second or third round, we start to see it going back in the old way, the standard going where it's harder to get a penalty than it is to take one. But right now, the standard is really difficult, and they're calling it unbelievably close.
And to that, Pierre, is that smart on the league side? Defense is going to get tired, power plays will improve, and quite simply, we should see more goals based on that?
You say all of the above. I would agree with you. The one caveat to that, and again, 3 games a day in the summer in these buildings. I know there are no fans, but the one caveat to that is the condition of the ice long term. Right now, it's not a problem, even though I found last night in the third game that I did that the ice started to deteriorate a little bit. It's the same thing where I could tell you from the Minnesota-Vancouver game, not at the beginning, but near the middle part of the second period or the third period, the ice was not as good. And I talked to players about it, and they said the same thing. So that's the only caveat. It's harder to run a power play on bad ice than it is on good ice. But the ice has not been terrible, and it has not been an issue yet, but we'll see long term. That's my only caveat to that.
All right, good stuff. On that note, we'll let you go. You got another big day ahead today with 6 more games, including the game you'll do, the nightcap for everybody, which is Minnesota-Vancouver after the Wild won game one. Always appreciate the time and the insight, Pierre. Have a great day and look forward to chatting with you again tomorrow.
Nice having you back, JR. Good to talk with you. Take care. Enjoy the hockey, everybody. Stay safe. Sean, nice talking to you.
Edmonton. Pierre sounds pretty fresh for 6 a.m. in the morning, but again, not the overwhelming schedule we're used to with Pierre's.
Yeah.
You said last year, was it the second round? Dallas to St. Louis to San Jose to Denver. Right?
Yeah.
Those are the four cities. He was doing a game every night, flying every morning.
Yeah.
In and out. Absolutely crazy. He's hunkered down out in Edmonton, as everybody covering these series from the inside is. And certainly just from a rest point of view, much easier on these guys.
Oh, and completely different. If you're in scouting or management and you're flying around, JR, take a picture of yourself in September and then also take a picture of yourself in April. Also what clothes you're able to fit into and not fit into. It's a grind. Like it really does. Anyone that does travel for a living understands it is not easy. And for Pierre to hunker down, to be focused on the hockey has come to him. Oh, I think it's absolutely night and day.
Yep. That'd be perfect for that gig then. Putting on weight, no problem.
Yeah. You got the hunker down thing down as well, too.
Easily. Yes. I took advantage of this quarantine thing.
Very nice. Very nice. All right. So today's schedule, again, the first game of the day is at noon on a will watch for sure. Where does Florida Islanders game two rank for you, Simmer?
You know what? I'm at the point right now, JR, we're almost all outside of maybe a late game between Minnesota and Vancouver. And even that, Vancouver, wondering if they're tough enough. I'm still intrigued enough that I'll watch. I mean, for today at noon,
This is the test. Okay. Arizona, Nashville at 2:30.
Still intrigued.
Wow.
Well, a couple of things. No, because the series just, you know, hey, in a best of five, I guess that's the neat part is that, again, unless it's super late and I find Minnesota very boring, there's enough. I also want to see, and this is the opportunity, Taylor Hall's the only hockey player I know that tries to pass with himself, and at times he does use the boards to also do it. I want to see if he can continue
with that
theory.
He wants to get on the score sheet with a goal and an assist on the same goal?
I watched the amount of time that he must possess the puck along with Ehlers and Connor and how pissed off he'd be playing with him. I've never seen somebody try to pass themselves as much as Taylor Hall. It actually just makes me laugh. And you know what it makes me think of? Not even close to a player was when Rico Fatta was in London. and they used to do a chart of Rico. The coaches hated him. Well, they didn't hate him. It's a personal way he played. They'd be like, we're going to do a chart of where Rico's on the ice tonight. And they would just start drawing like a kindergartner all over the ice surface. This is the ice that he's covered, and that's what I find. But no, I'm really enjoying it, and just because it's not like a best of seven where, okay, maybe it's an elimination game. I want to see how Saros bounce back. I want to watch Dutchie Dangle and Mr. Johansson, who David Poile has blocked out all the Columbus Blue Jackets games, because anytime Seth Jones comes on the television, David probably barfs.
Wow.
like ripping the heart, like let's rip the heart out of your team. Bring in an underachiever, give him an 8x8, and hey, every sports fan has lived it. It would be sickening when you draft somebody like that, a quality athlete, and you watch him out there playing and just people looking around realizing, again, the Armakeke line didn't just say it, hey, this guy should be up for a Norris Trophy. He's one of the premier defensemen in the National Hockey League.
For guys like us that have to get up nice and early, get the naps in the afternoon, is that those first two games? Perfect background noise to a nice nap, right?
Yeah, solid, yeah, and rain.
Yeah,
rain is always good for a nap, too.
Open the window a little bit so you get the sound of the rain and the hockey in the background, and then you snooze, set the alarm for, 3:50 to make a snack and watch Leafs, Blue Jackets game?
Some of my greatest naps of all time. I remember my window in Prague Marriott, opening that bad boy up, rain. When we had the cottage vacation a few weeks ago, rain, like seriously.
It's the soundtrack to sleep.
But just a little bit of cool air coming in, just enough to just tuck you right in.
Well, soundtrack to sleep, does that end? The hockey between Arizona and Nashville too, right?
Those two for sure. The ability to fall asleep during that or an Islanders Florida broadcast, there's no doubt. Now you kind of perk up and wake up, you fire up a little food, maybe a drink, and then you're ready to. I'll also say for this job, that 4 o'clock bad boy is nice because you can eat and drink and enjoy, and you could be somewhat half in the bag at 8 o'clock and realize, you know what, I'm still in pretty good shape for work tomorrow.
And you know what, it is the game. It is the game that.
How do you know my plans?
It's the game we'll end up talking the most about, and it'll be over by 6:30 or 7 o'clock, barring multiple overtime.
Yeah.
So you'll have lots of time to kind of think of your smoking hot takes for the Leafs and Blue Jackets 4 o'clock game.
Well,
today.
Exactly. And I keep hearing Alan May in the back of my head because I do find I am going towards sarcasm on Dutchie Dangle and some of the other things that are happening. I don't know if being on the Leafs watch this early for an elimination, blue team elimination, I don't know. Do we need to draw this out just a little bit more, or do we want them down 2-0 and on the ropes?
Wow.
Like
going down on like the Titanic three straight though? Wow.
Like, and then do you not want that though? Do you want them to pretend that they're alive and win game three?
Like a,
only to drag it out? Like, yes. like a, this is, you know, this is back to not Shawshank, the Green Mile, like where they electrocute the guy and it wasn't done properly.
Right.
And you got to go back in and do it again.
Spoiler alert. I haven't seen the Green Mile yet.
Okay.
If I were to give you guys odds though, to take, if the Leafs lost tonight, to win a game the rest of the series, like any belief or confidence at all?
The Leafs can't get swept in this. Yeah. There's no way. There's no way with that level of talent, especially at forward, that they are going to get.
But their checkout ability is
No. This is the handbook though, Bunda. You got a really cocky, arrogant bunch. You know that going into whatever we're calling, I normally call it summer, going into whatever the hell this is, late summer, fall, you got to win one game to pretend you care, because that at least starves off the fact that you gave up, right? So, no, you go down 2-0, they'd win game three, then they'd lose game four, and Big Willie is off to wherever Willie wants to go.
Yeah.
He's free.
Wee Willy Wonka.
He's free.
I think the Leafs are going to win today. I think this is a huge game for them.
I would not disagree, and I don't even, from watching that game the other day, JR, some adjustments to the point of, and we'll watch this last year, what they ended up doing, especially St. Louis versus Boston, where finally they got a forecheck on Seth Jones and Werenski. Okay, maybe forget that, but even for their minutes, and you start pressuring them, the question would be, the best forechecking line for the Toronto Maple Leafs is their smallest crew, right? Kerfoot, Kapanen, and Robertson. Can they be effective and even sustain anything? Because that's a problem that you present with Columbus, is that big boy hockey, I would think that line against some other matchups could be pretty effective. So can they deploy that a little differently?
Right. What'd you think of Robertson, by the way? Had the good chance right in the very first shift, right? It kind of knifed in and had a good opportunity to score a goal.
Yeah.
I thought after that, and I'm listen, first NHL game, 18 years old, you know, there's so much hype around this this kid. I thought the line was good, but do you roll right back in with him in the same line again today?
Yeah, I really would, because now here's what it is. And again, with smaller guys, it's like watching Montreal. You got to make a decision on, first of all, forecheck-wise, how much pressure do I want to put on? At the same time, I need some support to sustain it, right? Like, it was almost like individually, they would lose a puck battle. Then, of course, the puck turns back the other way. They've got to make a decision without a deep pairing they're out there. Is that, listen, let's get down. Let's try to create a little bit of speed and a little bit of a cycle. But no, I think I would look at that line. I think they could get better in a hurry. And again, they can avoid the main matchup of Werenski, Seth Jones, and of course, Dubois as a centerman.
They got to get the goat out of there. They put Spets at center, get the goat out of there, bring in Engvall, who's got all kinds of speed or whatever. I mean, Freddie Gauthier played, what, 3.5 minutes at 5-on-5?
Yeah,
and you're dressing
him
because he's a big guy and Columbus is a big team.
Yeah.
Well, if he's not going to play, why dress him?
Yeah.
He poses zero threat whatsoever with the puck on a stick.
Yeah.
It's a black hole.
Yeah.
Give Spezza, you know, somebody with a little bit of speed to work with. You know, make your fourth line that you can put them out there for 8 or 9 minutes.
Yeah, no, I agree, and I'd even look at a way to hopefully Mikheyev ends up being a little bit better. Now, it's his first game. The Engvall one, to me, is I don't want to say shocking, but this is kind of, hey, philosophically, if you're thinking that you can outskate and outskill Columbus, then why put in a player that can't play? Do you know what I mean? Like, hey, you might as well go all in. And as far as effectiveness, Jason Spezza, still very good on faceoff, still can apply some things. So, I would try to move that around and even try to get him out in some draws against Dubois and learn where down a little bit.
Hands up if you had ever heard of, is it Dean Kukin? This third pairing defenseman for Columbus. I'll be the first to admit I don't watch a lot of Columbus Blue Jackets hockey.
Yeah.
But I like to think I've heard of most players that have played in the NHL. I've never even heard of this guy before.
Yeah, actually.
Old Mr. Kukin.
German relation to coffee Kukin, which is usually a 4 o'clock snack.
Yes. Right after the nap. I'm going to have some Kukin. Some caffeine Kukin.
Didn't he score against Ottawa when he was here, though?
I don't know.
Yeah, that's where I think I heard his name from.
So. I actually went through this morning. I was going through the scratches of one of the team or one of the games. There was a list 10 deep of guys I'd never heard of, and I'm thinking, this is a cycle you get into of these expanded rosters and not following some of the American League teams that closely that aren't playing against the Belleville Senators.
Okay, if I had to ask you, what nationality is Dean, and it's regular old North American Dean Kukin? What can you tell me?
You know what? Only
because
of the variation of what they're going to end up doing with Ville Sirin and his scouting. I'm going to throw it out there. I'm just going to say, I'm going to go Danish.
Close. Swiss.
Okay.
He is Swiss. He's actually, He's actually played in the NHL for parts of the last four seasons, including 33 games this past year. But, boy, he's perfect for that system. I mean, it's like Torts can roll out these kind of no-name guys. You know, like David Savard, I think we all know, and he's a good player. But Gavrikov, who that was a really good second unit that they rolled out there as well. So it wasn't. It is a drop off. Don't get me wrong. From Jones to and Roenske to the next group, but it's not gigantic. Where you're going, hey, if I can just get a matchup against somebody else, I'm good to go.
Well, Gavrikov, watching him in his D zone coverage and the length he has, I thought he was outstanding. Even the ability to throw Liam Footy out there and just pace and contact, right? And this is the competition they're trying to create within. No, I actually thought, again, those guys, and this is what, when Pierre touched on Kotkaniemi, I said 10 minutes. He mentioned Domi playing later in the lineup. This goes back to what Claude Julien is coaching in fallback mode, right? Like, he's putting out whoever he thinks can hold the fort. He's not thinking anything about challenging offensively. He just wants to kind of hang around versus doing anything bold.
Just wants to nurse it to overtime, right?
You know, and philosophically, hey, that's what he's also won with. That's the reason that Tyler Seguin was never playing center in Boston. So that's where he's kind of at with a guy like Max Domi, who I would absolutely slide up to the wing and get more ice time for.
I thought the Leafs were holding Ben Harper specifically for playoff physicality, but I guess they still believe they can win a playoff series without bullies.
You know what? It's a possibility.
They suck so bad. That comes from unsigned.
One lineup that I wouldn't mind seeing would be the goat in the middle with a cheesy mustache, and then I'd have Harps on one side. And is Colin Greeny still around? Hey? You want to crash and bang.
Is he not the captain of the Marlies?
Well, he retired, I think, a year ago. Did he not, Bunda?
I don't know. I gotta go check my hockey cards.
I thought he had done probably a well-paying job. I thought he had slid rated in Chicago and was working somewhere
at that time, right?
Yeah.
All right. So Leafs in Columbus again. Note the start time. That's a 4 o'clock face-off this afternoon. The Calgary Winnipeg game, 6:45, and then the late game is a Minnesota Vancouver at 10:45. So that's the way your six-game NHL play-in and playoff slate rolls out today. We'll talk more hockey with Jim Montgomery, the former coach of the Dallas Stars. Will join us coming up just after 9 o'clock. It's 8:47. We'll come back and talk some Raptors. They're off to a great start in the NBA's return to play. The Blackjacks can clinch a playoff spot at the Summer Series tournament with a win tonight. We'll chat about that. And the Blue Jays, after being off since Thursday, finally return to the field tonight as well. So that's all straight ahead right here on Sports Radio TSN 1200. The NBA's return to play, and we'll talk about the Raptors just a second. We got baseball underway for now. We'll talk about the Jays getting back at it tonight. But don't forget, starting Thursday, it is the first major of the golf season. PGA Championships going on out in Harding Park in San Francisco. Primetime golf for those of us back in the East. And we've got our annual TSN 1200 Majors pool up and ready to go online for you at tsn1200.ca. The banner is right there. Click on it. Fill out the relevant information. Pick your team. And if your total team score is lower, better than anyone else, you will win yourself the grand prize. Courtesy of our friends from Royal LePage Team Realty, your own Google Home. So you can say, hey, Google, turn on TSN 1200. It's that easy. Get the radio right in your house. All right. So, again, the deadline to enter is 7:55 a.m. on Thursday. So if you haven't picked your team out yet, make sure you do so. Well, do it right now because you'll say, put it off and then you'll forget and then you'll be too late. You'll be like Simmer, probably hasn't done his team yet, right, Simmer?
You know what? I get into all the things, and so I take that a little bit. I do every week of those NFL things. I don't miss any contests. I'll be locked and loaded. Question is, I don't know who the hell to pick, so I'm going to ask you, who's your favorite Canadian?
Who is my favorite Canadian?
Well, not favorite, but is there a Canadian? We've got some golfers that are playing pretty well. Anybody in the field?
The guy with the most experience, I would say, is Adam Hadwin. So if I had to pick one, I would say right now, Adam Hadwin. But all four Canadians made there was a World GC event, so all of them, you make the cut automatically. And he finished fourth of the four of them. That being said, he's got the most experience. So I'll go with Hadwin if you want to make me pick one of them.
Okay.
What about you?
I don't know.
Mackenzie Hughes?
No, we talked about it yesterday. I'll go through and look at the picks and kind of do it. I I've certainly followed the golf. You know who the big boys are. It seems like when you kind of get into the second, third, or kind of going down, it's almost Norton. For me, it's a name recognition versus
you
someone like
Tiger
yourself.
Or not?
Oh, I always do. Yeah, I know. I'm a big Tiger fan. Does this course, and that's you know that as well, this type of course set up well for him?
I haven't read that much of it. Yeah. You know,
he wins a lot in California, so let's go with it.
Yeah, okay.
That's at Pebble Beach, okay. Right?
Yeah. Well, it's San Francisco area, so it's in Northern California, and of course he's from Southern California.
Yeah, sure.
Justin Thomas, of course, won on the weekend, so he is back to world number one. John Rahm lasted 1 week as the world's number one ranked golfer before Justin Thomas pushed him out. So, again, make your picks. Get them to us before 7:55 a.m. on Thursday. And, again, it's all brought to you by our friends at Royal LePage Team Realty, our TSN 1200 Majors Pool. All right, 8:54. So the Raptors got another win yesterday thanks to Fred VanVleet, career-high 36 points. They beat Miami by 4, 107-103. So the Raptors are 2-0 to start the NBA's return to play, and they are now just a couple of wins away from clinching second spot in the East, which will get them a much more favorable first-round matchup than finishing third would be. Right now the Celtics are third, so the Raptors are looking good there. They face Orlando coming up tomorrow night in their third game. They play 8 games in total. And by the way, the Lakers won last night, beat the Jazz by 8. Anthony Davis had 42 points and 12 rebounds, so the Lakers have clinched top spot in the West. So I tell you, the one thing that struck me about, I don't know how much of the NBA you've watched so far.
Yeah, I watched quite a bit of the Raptors-Lakers on a replay.
Yeah. How, other than the Raptors, you play great defense, how much scoring there's been.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure if it's the environment, if it's just the excitement of return to play, and these are still quote-unquote regular season games, and the guys don't care about defense as much. But there's been a lot. There's been a ton of scoring in these games.
Oh, there's been some of the games they've come in and people just not trying. No, it is quite simply guys not wanting to. And of all the years did JR get into a playoff, I just wonder as far as the upsets, right, of that part of you played the regular season. Certainly for 7 and 8 in the East, can you just do me a one night and then let me get out of here? You know, for other teams, like how much is the buy-in? How much are you enjoying this? And for the Lakers, I thought it was interesting. I think that's the first time that they've won the West since 2010, which I don't know why that's surprised me, but I guess with the dominance of San Antonio and Golden State, but been 10 years.
Yeah, well, they missed the playoffs for a bunch of years. Yeah, right? Last year was the first year LeBron missed the playoffs, I think, in his career, right?
So
big bounce back here for the Lakers, so they'll finish first and have whatever home court advantage there is when you're playing in a bubble environment, but they'll have that throughout the Western Conference playoffs. Speaking of basketball, by the way, the 2-win Ottawa Blackjacks will take on 1-win Niagara tonight at 7:30 in their second-to-last game at the Summer Series Tournament for the CEBL. Blackjacks started 0-2. They've won their last two. If they win tonight, they will clinch a spot in the playoff round. Again, 6 of the 7 teams make it. When they're sitting at 0-2, you're kind of wondering if they're going to be able to pull it out, but they've won two in a row. And if they beat Niagara, which is only has 1 win and would be eliminated with a loss tonight, they will clinch a spot in the top 6 and a spot in the playoffs, which will be this coming weekend.
Yeah, and pretty good after Phil Scrubs ended up having to go to France. So now they've won 2 in a row. And AJ seemed to, and I guess going in trying to handicap this, you've had turnover, Ottawa's expansion, that maybe the way it looks that their first 2 games were against the 2 best teams in the tournament. So trending in the right direction and assume like any expansion team, going to get better and better with each game.
8:57, the Blue Jays will play in Atlanta tonight. They haven't played since Thursday. Of course, their weekend series against the Phillies was called off. The Phillies finally played yesterday. Miami is going to play their first game today, but it'll be the Jays and the Braves tonight. And devastating news for Atlanta last night as a Canadian-born pitcher, Mike Soroka, was so good last year, played in the All-Star game, was second in the rookie voting, sixth in NL MVP voting. Here's a play in the third inning.
This one hit toward Freeman. Soroka tumbles off the mound. He's still down. Mike Soroka went down in a heap, and he is limping toward the foul line. Mike Soroka tried to break toward first base, and he is on 2 knees on the infield grass. Oh, no. Oh, no.
Or his Achilles. The way he couldn't put pressure on it, Chip, I hope I'm wrong, but I'm hoping that's not the Achilles right there.
Oh, boy.
There you go. And that diagnosis, that's pretty quick diagnosis for our broadcast team. Absolutely right. Mike Soroka, torn Achilles, and he will miss the rest of the baseball season. So devastating news for the Braves, obviously, and for baseball, you lose another star player.
Yeah, and funny, JR, when you talk about injuries and, you know, you kind of see trends and going all the way back to the late, great Kobe Bryant, but last year, those terrible visual of KD going down on the court, and you see something like this, kind of a trend towards different injuries, right, on the way you train. Is there certain pressure points, or just say, this is just the way it goes? But fortunately for today, what would have been maybe career-ending 15 years ago, you can rehab back, but still very sad for the athlete.
Yeah, and just such an innocuous play. Again, you can hear, you know, hearing that replay, right? It was just a chopper on the infield. He goes to push off to run to first, and it's not like his leg turns in any way. In fact, when he fell, I just thought he fell, and then you watch it again, and immediately you could tell that there was something significantly wrong, and our broadcast friends had it right there, torn Achilles for Mike Soroka.
No good.
No good whatsoever. No, indeed. Meanwhile, the biggest news with baseball is what's going on with the St. Louis Cardinals. They have become the new wave, Miami Marlins. They've got 13 players and staff in total, 7 players, 6 staff, that have now been tested positive for COVID-19. So the Cardinals series over the weekend in Milwaukee was canceled. Their series this week with Detroit is out, and they're hoping to get back on the field and being able to field a team Friday against the Chicago Cubs. But they, like the Marlins, are missing a significant portion of their schedule. We'll have to see how all this plays out.
Yeah, and when you look at the JR for the traveling around, if the United States was still in somewhat of a lockdown and you're moving around city to city, if the numbers were trending where they were a couple of months ago, you say, you know what, maybe a chance. But in a free and open society, as close as it is with buses, hotels, charters, going to stadiums, any little bit of movement, as reported by the Miami Marlins, if accurate, to just going out to, even if whatever you're going out to, the fact that this all of a sudden spread through a couple of locker rooms, it just doesn't seem like there's any light at the end of the tunnel, that this is going to change any during the entire season. And if you're the sport, like, do you really want to get to a playoff and be traveling around to multiple cities? Or do you make a decision, listen, if we're ever lucky enough to finish off this regular season,
bubble,
let's head to one city and fit to the playoffs like the NBA and the NHL. That has to be thought about, both for the MLB and the NBA, NFL, sorry.
Yeah, but the question for baseball would be, okay, normally you'd probably, just because you want to make sure you get all the games in, right? You'd probably want to go to either a warm weather city or a dome, right? And your warm weather cities are kind of at, you know, we're talking late October into November, potentially. You're looking at, Florida, bad. Yeah. Texas, bad. Arizona, bad.
Yeah.
California, bad. Like the places you would go to outdoors. Now, trying to think now, dome stadiums where they could potentially go. There's a few retractable roof stadiums, right? Or I guess you could go to, I think Milwaukee is a retractable roof, I want to say.
Oh, does it? Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
I believe so.
Minnesota's got the big open air now.
Yeah, exactly.
Toronto, you're not coming to, but the trend has been to move away from that. And yeah, as I say, just...
I think that's a smart idea, though. If they are somehow able to get a regular season in, because all the reason they're back, as all sports are back, is for the television money.
Yeah, for sure.
And the playoffs is where the bulk of that television money is made. You want to make sure this regular season is just a lead up to where the real money maker is, and that is the playoffs.
Yeah.
You got to make sure if you're baseball, you get your those playoff games in. So have it in a place where you can put the players in like they are in the NBA and the NHL and see if you can make it work.
Well, and then that was what we wondered about. Now, so far, so good, knock on wood, with the NBA. I mean, they are in Florida. When we had Alan May on talking about Dallas, would the Texas Rangers be a host? Could you do that with one city? A ball diamond, I guess, turning it over, how you could end up doing that. But I think it's being shown by the NBA. Hey, you could still be in a hot spot, but if you control the environment, people buy in, you create the proper bubble, I'm sure they could pull it off.
All right, well, we will wait and see on that. So Jays and Braves tonight. Matt Shoemaker, by the way, will throw for the Blue Jays. They are 3-4, in case you've forgotten, because it's been so long since they played.